TV Bible Study is a serious effort to study in depth every word of God. Each 30-minute lesson has been carefully arranged to assist you with your study of God's Word. And now for your TV Bible Study teacher, Richard Rogers.
We want to welcome you again to TV Bible Study. We're studying the history of the Hebrew nation in our study of Bible history. The books are Joshua through 2 Chronicles. We're in the midst of a study of the United Kingdom, and this is our fourth and last study in David's reign. David, as we've already studied, came to the throne and ruled only Judah alone for a period of 7 years and 6 months. That's found in chapters 1 to 4. Then at the death of Ish-bosheth, the son of Saul, he becomes king over all of Israel and fights two wars, the wars with the Jebusites and the wars with the Philistines, that brings a united empire, a united nation, into existence. And he consolidates it even further by a marriage with the daughter of Saul, a woman named Michal. Then God gives to him a messianic promise, as he says that David will be the one, his family will be the one, through whom the seed promised to the woman and promised to Abraham would come, that would rule upon the throne of David forever and bring universal blessings to all the nations of the earth. Then David fights five wars of expansion, as he expands that small nation that Saul had left him to be a nation that extended to and beyond all the limits of the promised land given in Genesis chapter 15 in verse 18. But now we're looking at the tragedies in David's reign, the calamities of his reign. We've already seen number one, because of his sin with Bathsheba and Uriah, that trouble and evil have now come in his house and will never again leave. And the rest of the calamities of his reign will show that to be true. We pick up our study today in 2 Samuel chapter 13 with the second calamity of David's kingship, and that's the story of Amnon and Tamar. Look with me in chapter 13, and let's read for a moment, beginning in verse 1. And it came to pass after this that Absalom, the son of David, had a fair sister whose name was Tamar. And Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Now, they had the same father, but different mother. And Amnon was so vexed that he fell sick because of his sister Tamar, for she was a virgin. And it seemed hard to Amnon to do anything unto her. But Amnon had a friend, a man whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shammah, David's brother. And Jonadab was a very subtle man. Some friends are not the right kind of friends, and Jonadab isn't. And he said unto him, "Why, a son of the king, art thou this lean from day to day? Will thou not tell me?" And Amnon said, "I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister." And Jonadab said unto him, "Lay thee down on the bed, and feign thyself sick. When thy father cometh to see thee, say, let my sister Tamar come, I pray thee, and give me bread to eat, and dress the food in my sight, that I see it, and eat it from her hand." And he feigned himself sick, and he said, "Let Tamar come." And Tamar came. And when he came, he put all of the men away from the chamber, and he humbled Tamar. He lay with her. She didn't want to do it, but he forced her to do it. And after he'd done it, it says in verse 15, then Amnon hated her with an exceeding great hatred, for the hatred wherewith he hated her was greater than the love wherewith he loved her. And Amnon said, "Arise, be gone." And she said, "Not so. This thing that you've done, that you do now, is worse than you've done it to first." He ought to have taken her to be his wife, but he would not hearken unto her heart. And he called his servant and he said, "Put this woman from me and bolt the door after her." He treated her as a harlot. He had his satisfaction with her, and then he hated her. Now, in verse 18, she does an unusual thing. And she had a garment of divers colors upon her, for with such robes were the king's daughter's apparel, that were virgin's apparel. When his servant brought her out and bolted the door after her, then Tamar put ashes on her head and rent her garment of divers colors that were upon her, and she laid her hand upon her head and went her way crying aloud. She wears mourning clothes now, sorrowful clothes. She'll not wear the clothes of virginity. And Absalom, her brother, asked her what the problem is. And she tells Absalom what Amnon has done. And Absalom says, "You go your way as if nothing has happened." But then I read in verse 22, "And Absalom spake unto Amnon neither good nor bad, for Absalom hated Amnon because he'd forced his sister Tamar." 2 full years later, Absalom is going to kill Amnon. He makes a feast. And while Amnon's heart is merry, the servants of Absalom kill Amnon, as Amnon has commanded. And Absalom is afraid that when David hears what he has done, that David will call him unto judgment. And so Absalom will, in verse 34, get upon his ass and flee from the wrath, he thinks, of his father's anger. But he reminds David before he leaves that none of the king's sons are dead, for Jonadab sent a message back to David that said Absalom has killed all of the king's sons. But Absalom said, "I've killed only one son." Now, if you remember in our study last time, in 2 Samuel chapter 12, David himself pronounced a curse upon David, because of his murder of Uriah by saying he would pay 4 lambs for the 1 lamb he took. The son, the little infant that was born to Bathsheba has died, and now Amnon has died. He has paid half of the price for his sin. And that is, of course, the story of Amnon and Tamar. The third calamity in David's reign is Absalom's rebellion. And this one is rather long. It goes from chapter 13, verse 34, through chapter 19, verse 43, through most chapter 19 in 2 Samuel. And we want to outline this briefly. Let's look at this outline. Number one, we'll look at Absalom's flight from his father because he fears his wrath. But then Joab will effect his return in chapter 14. And he will lead in rebellion against David in chapter 15, which will cause David to have to flee, beginning in chapter 15, verse 13, through chapter 18 and verse 8. He actually will run. He actually will flee the city of Jerusalem and run before Absalom. Then Absalom will die, number 5, in chapter 18, verses 9 to 33, and David will mourn greatly his death. But then in chapter 19, verses 1 to 43, he finally will be comforted concerning his son's death. Now, that's too long of a section to read every verse together, but I think it would be good if we told the narrative and read enough of the story to see exactly what happens during this occasion as it brings calamity upon the house of David. First of all, his flight. Look beginning in verse 34. "But Absalom fled, and the young man that kept the watch lifted up his eyes, and behold, there came much people by the way of the hillside behind him. And Jonadab said to the king, 'Behold, the king's sons are come. As thy servant said, so it is.' It came to pass, as soon as he'd made an end of speaking, behold, the king's sons came and lifted up their voice and wept. And the king also, and all of his servants, wept very sore." That's because of Amnon's death. "But Absalom fled and went to Talmai, the son of the king of Geshur. And David mourned for his son every day. So Absalom fled and went to Geshur and was there 3 years. And the soul of King David longed to go forth unto Absalom, for he was comforted concerning Amnon, seeing he was dead." You don't mourn the dead forever. I mean, even when the closest one dies, you don't mourn his or her death forever. He is through mourning Amnon, and now he misses Absalom, who was one of his favorite sons. Now, David goes around the palace very sad. He goes around mournful because Absalom is gone. And Joab knows that if David stays that way, that an enemy will finally be able to defeat David and take away from David his kingdom and from Joab his being general of David's army. And so Joab goes into David and he speaks to David concerning recalling Absalom. Actually uses a wise woman, a woman of Tekoa, to get the job done. And then David finally sees the wisdom that is seen in the words. And although Absalom is a murderer, and although he has killed his brother, David probably concluded that he had some just reason to do so. Because the Lord said that if a man was guilty of adultery, he should have been carried to the judges and stoned to death. But Absalom knew that David would never sentence his son Amnon to die. And so Absalom had taken the place of the avenger of blood that the law gave him a right to do, and he had slain his brother Amnon. And so there was a way in which Absalom's act was even a little bit or somewhat justified. And Joab and the woman of Tekoa appeal to David along this line, and David finally is led to see that Absalom ought to be brought back to the land. Absalom is brought back, and David said, it's all right for him to be back, but he cannot see my face. Well, Absalom doesn't like that because he wants to be the number one son of the king. So he tries to get an audience with Joab to get him to get to see the king, but Joab won't come see him. And so Absalom sets Joab's field on fire. He sets Joab's grain on fire, and Joab then runs to see Absalom and says, why did you set my wheat on fire? He said, because I called for you to come see me, and you wouldn't come see me. And therefore, I've set your field on fire. Joab said, what do you want? He said, I want to see the king. He said, I might as well have stayed in Geshur if I'm not going to be able to see my father. And so Joab procured for him a right to see the king, and Absalom came in and bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king. And the last verse of chapter 14 says, the king kissed Absalom. So Absalom has not only returned to the land, Absalom has now returned to the goodwill and the honor of his father. Now, I'm sorry to say Absalom's not a good boy, because in chapter 15, verses 1 to 12, Absalom will now lead in a rebellion against David, his father. He sits in the gate as one of the judges. See, David not only forgave him, he established him as a judge, for he's sitting in the gate. Now, if the cases that came to court in the gate were not able to be solved, they'd be passed on to the king. But most of the disputes would be settled, not by the king, but by these elders that sat in the gate, and Joab was one of them. And when there was a man coming with a case too hard for the judges, and he was going on to the king, Absalom would say, oh, I wish I were king. If I were king, if I were ruler, I would see that you got what you wanted. I'd see that you got the justice due you, and that your case would be settled in your favor. And so verse 6, the last part says, so Absalom stole the heart of the men of Israel. And it came to pass after so many years. I don't know how. My text says 40, but you know it can't be 40, because David only reigned 33 years in Jerusalem. And the Septuagint version says 4, and maybe that's how many it is. Most of the texts just don't have a number, most of the original texts. And so any number would be supplied by conjecture. But 4 is as good as any. 4 years pass, or some years pass, and Absalom has stolen the heart of the people. He is now the favored one of the people rather than David himself. And Absalom says that he needs to go and offer a sacrifice in Hebron. Because he said he made a vow when he was in Geshur of Syria that he would offer God a sacrifice in Hebron. He's not wanting to do that at all. He's lying. As soon as he leaves the city, he gathers unto him a great army, and he tells this army that they're going to fight David and that Absalom is going to be made the king of Israel. Now, David won't fight his son. David had an army, just 37 men in it, his mighty men, that would have been able to defeat Absalom in a moment, in a day. But David, at first, will not fight Absalom. So David, the fourth point of our outline of Absalom's rebellion, flees from his son. And he goes out without any of his army or many of his mighty men. And Absalom comes into the city of Jerusalem and finds it an empty city. And he sits upon the throne of David, rather than David his father. And to shame his father, and to tell all of Israel what he thinks of David, on the top of the roof, in the sight of all of Israel, he lies or lays with David's concubines and the wives of David that were left behind. As Ahithophel advised that. So Ahithophel, the wise man, is driving a wedge forever between Absalom and David. He will never be able to forgive him again. He will not be able to promote him again because in the sight of all of Israel, he has shamed David. And then we read all the way through chapter 18, a very interesting and graphic and tragic story about Absalom's attempt to destroy David as king. Absalom has a wise counselor named Ahithophel, as we've already said. And Ahithophel's word was as the word of God. Ahithophel's wisdom was so great that when Ahithophel gave advice, it was as if God had spoken. There was another counselor in Israel, counted as wise as him, and only one, and that was Hushai. And Hushai came out to be with David. And David said, no, I'm going to be running now, and I don't want you to be with me. I want you to go back and say to Absalom that you will be his counselor, that your counsel may be able to upset the counsel of Ahithophel. I want you to give opposite counsel to Ahithophel, and God will use you in order to put down Ahithophel's counsel. Now, Ahithophel said this to Absalom, we need to chase David and his men right now before they get shut up someplace and they can hide David and the mighty men get ready to guard him. If we'll chase him right now, we'll catch him while he's still on the run and away from his mighty men, and we'll be able to kill him. That's good advice, militarily speaking, humanly speaking. That's the only way they can kill David. But now Hushai is there in order to give different counsel. He said, oh, you know better than that. Your father is a man of war. And by now he's already hid somewhere in some cave. And you'll go up there and you'll start fighting him, and you'll run into the mighty men. And Jeshubim will kill about 800 of you, and Eliezer will kill 400 or 500 of you, and Joab will kill 600 or 700 of you, and Abishai, Joab's brother, kill several hundred of you, and all these mighty men will kill 2,000 or 3,000 of you, and then the people will become discouraged, and their heart will turn from you. What you need to do is you need to gather all of the children of Israel into a great big army, and then go and fight your father David. And Absalom says, this time, Hushai's advice is better than that of Ahithophel. Now, Ahithophel knows it isn't. So Ahithophel gets on his mule, and he goes home, and he sets his house in order, and he kills himself. Because he knows what's going to happen now. He knows David is going to defeat Absalom. And when David defeats Absalom, he knows that he, Ahithophel, will be slain by David. And so he goes home, puts all of his house in order, and hangs himself. Here's a fellow couldn't stand to see. He realized what was going to happen to him. In chapter 18, beginning with verse 9, you have finally the war, or actually starting with verse 1 of chapter 18, you have finally the war that David will fight with Absalom. And as he sends the army out to fight, he charges all of the captains saying, you deal kindly. You deal well with the young man Absalom. You don't kill Absalom. You make sure that Absalom is saved alive in this battle. And he charged all of the captains likewise. And then they went out in verses 6 to 8, and they began to fight with Absalom's army. And they totally routed his army. See, Absalom had gathered a huge army of all of Israel, but David and his mighty men. Or David's mighty men, he stays in the cave. He doesn't go to fight. David's mighty men are able to completely rout and to put in flight the army of Absalom. Now, Absalom begins also to run upon his mule. Now, Absalom had long hair. He cut his hair once a year, and I don't remember. It tells in the text how many pounds the hair weighed when he cut it once a year. He had long, flowing locks. And as he rides on this mule through the forest, of course, the locks, I'm sure, begin to fly. And he goes underneath a tree, and as he goes underneath a tree, the text said his head is caught in the boughs. Not his hair, his head, his whole head is caught in the bough, and he swings there. And Joab's servants see him doing so, and they come and tell Joab that Absalom is hanging in the trees. And Joab said, why didn't you kill him? If you'd have killed him, I would have given you a change of raiment. And the servants of Joab said, if you'd given us all of your goods or half your goods, we couldn't have killed him because David said to deal well with him. And we cannot go beyond the word of the king to do less or more. Joab doesn't have any time for that. He goes to where Absalom is hanging and he throws darts through his heart and sticks a stave in his heart and kills him. And then the men that bear Joab's armor compass Absalom about and they slay him. And Joab blows the trumpet and the war is over. Now then, a messenger needs to carry this word back to David. I want you to read with me in chapter 18, beginning with verse 19, as Joab gets ready for David to hear the word of his son's death. Let's start reading in verse 19. Then said Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, let me now run and bear the king tidings, how that Jehovah hath avenged him of his enemies. But Joab says, thou shalt not be bearer of tidings this day, for because you have no sufficient tidings. He had not seen that which he needed to see. And the Cushite said, Joab said to the Cushite, you go tell the king what you've seen. And Ahimaaz said, let me go also. And Joab said, okay, go. And Ahimaaz outran the Cushite. But when he got to David, he wasn't able to tell him what had occurred. But the Cushite came, and David had one question. Is it well with the young man Absalom? He's too much of a father to be a good king. He doesn't ask, did I win the war? Am I king again? He said, how is it with the young man Absalom? And the Cushite answers in verse 32 in a way that was very wise. He said, I would to God that all of the enemies of my lord the king and anybody that would do my lord the king hurt be as that young man is. He reminds David that son of his is his enemy. David goes to his chamber and he weeps. Oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would to God I died for thee. Oh, Absalom, my son. He knows this boy died in rebellion not only to the king but to God. And for days he will not be comforted. And then finally in chapter 19, Joab goes unto him and says, look, all of Israel wait for you to come out in honor and in rejoicing for the victory. If you continue to stay here in your chamber and mourn your son who was your enemy's death, then the children of Israel's heart will be turned to another man. And you'll no longer be king. And Joab's right. So David takes off the sackcloth and he puts on his royal garment. And he goes out on the balcony and he greets the people. And he receives their honor and their glory and their congratulations for the victory that he'd won. And he receives again their pledge that he will be their king. And that ended the rebellion of Absalom. There were two other calamities in David's reign, and we'll look at them only briefly. Number one is Sheba's rebellion in chapter 20, verses 1 to 26. Now, Sheba's a Benjamite and a very base person. And he gathers together several of the tribes to rebel against David. But Joab just takes real quickly two shots at him. Number one, he fights him on the battlefield and he's beaten. And he runs to the city of Abel. And there Joab chases him and tells the men of Abel that if they do not release Sheba to him, then he's going to defeat their city. And they said, what shall we do? He said, just cut his head off and throw it over the wall. So the elders of the people of Abel have a trial. And they find Sheba truly to be in rebellion against the king. And they cut his head off and they throw it over the wall. But that caused David to lose not only some of his army, but also some of the respect of the people as king. Then last of all, as far as calamities are concerned, in chapter 24, David numbers the people. Now, this is not an ordinary census, for he numbers only the men that are old enough to fight. And God is angry. Because, you see, as David numbers his army, he is saying that he's trusting in his army and in his power and not in Jehovah. You remember earlier? Every time when David went out to battle, he inquired of God, and now he's inquiring of his army. He's trying to see his strength, and he's trying to parade his power before the people. And so God gives him a choice. He says, I want you to choose what's going to happen to you. Will you have 7 years of famine on the land? This is in chapter 24, verse 13. Will you have 7 years of famine upon the land? Or will you flee before your enemies 3 months? Or will you have 3 days of pestilence? And David says, I'm in a strait. I do not know what to choose. I will throw myself upon the hand of God and upon the mercy of Jehovah. He said, I played God once in numbering the people. I'll not play God twice. And so God sent him 3 days of pestilence. And many of his people died. To the point that David finally prayed, Lord, if you're going to judge anybody, judge me. Judge me, but what have these sheep done? What have my people done? Judge the shepherd. Don't judge the sheep. And the hand of Jehovah was turned from David. The last part of David's life, very quickly, is David's closing days. And we read of that, not in the book of 2 Samuel, but in 1 Kings chapter 1, chapter 1, verse 1 through chapter 2, verse 12. David's an old man in verses 1 to 4 of chapter 1, and he can't get any body heat. And so they bring in a young virgin named Abishag, and she lies in the bosom of David, and he finds heat and therefore can sleep. But the text says in verse 4, the king knew her not. She came a virgin, and she left a virgin. And then Adonijah, one of the sons of David, wants to be king, but David doesn't want him to be king, and Bathsheba, his wife, surely doesn't want him to be. So Nathan and Bathsheba come to David, and they talk David into appointing Solomon to be king, even before he, David, dies. So in chapter 1, verses 5 to 23, Solomon is appointed and chosen and said to be king by David. And in chapter 2, verses 1 to 9, David charges Solomon about what he'll do as king. Number 1, he'll obey God. Number 2, he'll see that Joab dies and doesn't go to the grave in peace. Number 3, he'll show kindness to Barzillai, who'd shown kindness to David while he was running from Absalom. And number 4, he'll see that Shammai, who had cursed David when he was running from Absalom, will also die and not go to the grave in peace. We'll see Solomon do all of those in our lesson next time. And then finally, David dies. Verse 10 through 12 of 1 Kings 2. And David slept with his fathers and was buried in the city of David. And the days that David reigned over Israel were 40 years. 7 years reigned he in Hebron, and 33 years reigned he in Jerusalem. And Solomon sat upon the throne of David his father, and his kingdom was established greatly. We didn't have near enough time to cover David properly. David is one, as far as I'm concerned, of the five most important men of the Old Testament. Every king in Judah will now be compared to David. It will either be said he walked in the way of Jehovah, as did David his father, or it will be said he did not walk in the way of Jehovah, as did David his father. All of the kings from now on will be compared to David. That's why in the book of Ezekiel, when Ezekiel is looking for a king or is given a king that will be typical of Jesus, he says in chapter 33 and 34 and other sections that David will again be king when the Messiah sits upon the throne of Jehovah. There will be another David one day, Jesus of Nazareth. Let's learn well the lessons of humility and the lessons of an honest and a contrite confession from David. May God bless your day-by-day study of His Word. We'll see you in our study next time. God give you all kind of peace in believing in Jesus.
Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness.
These lessons are available on video cassette tape for use with video cassette players or TV station broadcasting. Audio cassette tapes are also available. This systematic study of the Bible was designed for a variety of uses. Teacher training programs, substitute teacher needs, community Bible study programs on local TV, and hospital closed circuit programs, to mention a few. God bless your study of His Word.